Sky has rated the following film as 18. This film contains strong language, scenes of violence, and mature themes.
British Sky Broadcasting presents In Bruges, starring Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson, and Ralph Fiennes. Directed by Martin McDonagh. Music by Carter Burwell. Voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. A grotesque stone gargoyle juts from the angle of an ornately carved church spire. A stone cupid, its nose broken off, smiles with sinister smugness. A cobbled footbridge leads from shadows to a dimly lit brick-arched doorway.
After I killed him, I dropped the gun in the Thames, washed the residue off my hands in the bathroom of a Burger King, and walked home to await instructions. Shortly thereafter, the instructions came through.
Get the fuck out of London, you dumb fucks.
Get to Bruges. I didn't even know where Bruges fucking was. It's in Belgium.
Bruges is a shithole.
Bruges is not a shithole.
Bruges is a shithole.
Ray, we've only just got off the fucking train. Could we reserve judgment on Bruges until we've seen the fucking
place? I know it's going to be a shithole.
A young man with dark hair trudges along by a middle-aged, sandy-haired man. The younger man appears to be in a bad mood. The older man, apparently trying to make the best of things, peers around as if looking for directions in the cobbled and quaintly gabled streets and canals of Bruges. A pregnant woman appears at the sound of the bell.
I think you have a couple of rooms booked under Cranham and Blakely.
Yes. No, we have one room booked.
Oh.
One twin room. Booked for 2 weeks.
2 weeks?!
Do you have another room?
No, I'm afraid we're fully booked. With Christmas. Everywhere's fully booked.
Okay.
The younger man holds his head in his hands. A room overlooks the canal.
It's very pretty.
I'm not being funny, we can't stay here.
We've got to stay here until he rings.
Well, what if he doesn't ring for 2 weeks?
Then we stay here for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks? In fucking Bruges? In a room like this? With you? No way.
Right. I really don't like to say this.
You really don't like to say what?
Well, you know.
Fucking bring that up.
The younger man hurries away and shuts himself in the bathroom. He hunches over as if in real distress. He then looks at himself in the mirror and wipes his eyes. A boat moves along a canal beneath a wonderfully slim church tower so tall that its top appears wreathed in wintry mist. The older man looks benignly around at the solid yet fanciful architecture of the city. The younger man sits hunched, looking at his companion.
Do you think this is good?
Do I think what's good?
You know, going around a boat, looking at stuff.
Yes, I do. It's called sightseeing.
The younger man does not seem to get it and draws his head deeper into his turned-up coat collar.
Ah, look at that. Former hospital. In the 1100s. Bruges is the most well-preserved medieval town in the whole of Belgium, apparently.
The older man's eyes widen as if to say, isn't that interesting? The young man's glower clearly implies, like I care. Bruges goes about its wholesome business. Bikes, buses and a lone horse-drawn carriage jog along over the cobbles. The two Irishmen stand at the foot of a tall stone tower.
Coming up.
What's up there?
The view.
The view of what? The view down here? I can see that from down here.
Ray, you're about the worst tourist in the whole world.
Ken, I grew up in Dublin. I love Dublin. If I'd grown up on a farm and was retarded,
Bruges might impress me, but I didn't, so it doesn't.
Ken walks away towards the tower. He looks back at Ray and shakes his head. At the ticket office, a heavy-jowled man looks up impassively as Ken approaches.
Try to get rid of my coins.
3, 50, 4, 4, 10, 20, 30, 4, 40, 4, 50, 4, 60, 4, 70, 4, 80, 4, 90. You take 4.90?
Entry is €5.
Come on, man, it's only 10 cents.
Entry is €5.
Ken's face hardens somewhat as he sweeps up the coins and hands over a €50 note.
Happy in your work?
Very happy.
The man's face betrays no flicker of any emotion. Ken arrives at the top of the steps up the tower. He peers into and then gently flicks a large bell suspended from the roof beams. Smiling to himself, he finds a vacant window ledge from where he can survey the amazing view down into the square far below.
I like it here.
Spotting Ray mooching around far below, Ken forms his right hand into a pistol and aims. He smiles and then leans back onto the ledge to take in the view. In the square, Ray sits shivering on a bench. Three fat people peering around at the architecture come to stand overly close to Ray's bench.
Been to the top of the tower?
Yeah. Yeah, it's rubbish.
It is. Guidebook says it's a must-see.
Well, you lot ain't going up there.
Pardon me? Why?
I mean, it's all windy stairs. I'm not being funny.
What exactly are you trying to say?
What exactly am I trying to say? These are a bunch of fucking elephants.
Fight you.
The American tourist launches himself at Ray, who nips nimbly out of the way. A Laurel and Hardy-style chase ensues.
Come on, leave it, Fatty.
The fat man has to stop and bend double for breath. His wife and daughter run to his aid. Ray loiters nearby.
You know you're just the rudest man. The rudest man.
What's all that about?
Ray shrugs.
They're not going up there. Guys, I wouldn't go up there. It's really narrow.
Screw you, motherfucker!
Ken's face falls.
Americans, isn't it?
Ken glowers at Ray.
Now this is more like proper holidays. One gay beer for my gay friend, one normal beer for me, because I am normal. This is the life.
We're not staying here getting pissed. We are quietly sightseeing, like he says, and awaiting his call to see what we do next.
This is my vote what we should do. We give it another day, 2 days max. We check the papers again, and if there's still nothing in them, we phone him and say, Harry, thank you for the trip to Bruges. It's been very nice, all the old buildings and that, but we're coming back to London now and hide out in a proper country where it isn't all just fucking chocolates.
My vote would be we quietly sightsee, like he says, and await his call to see what we do next.
You don't even know they're here hiding out.
What are you talking about?
You don't even know we're not here on a job.
What, on a job?
Yeah.
Here in Bruges?
Yeah.
Here in Bruges? On a job?
Yeah.
Why? What did he actually say?
He didn't actually say anything.
Why do you think it might be?
I don't think anything. But it's a bit fucking over elaborate, isn't it? Go take him to hideout. Go take him to hideout. Where? Go take him to hideout in fucking Bruges?
You can hide out in Croydon.
Or Coventry. Hmm. It is a bit over elaborate. But we haven't got any guns.
Harry can get guns anywhere.
A small flight of geese flaps along above the canal. The town seems very peaceful. Ray sits on the window seat of the hotel room looking out. Letting out a deep sigh of boredom, he looks across to where Ken lies on one of the beds, deep in a book and enjoying a snack.
He's not going to ring tonight.
Ken, oblivious, turns a page.
He's not going to ring tonight. Let's go out.
Go out where?
The pub.
No.
Ray appears crestfallen. He seems so bored that he could explode. He peers out of the window, then back across to Ken. The germ of an idea seems to come to him and he grins impishly.
Let's go out and have a look at some of all the old medieval buildings and that. Because I bet they look even better at night all lit up.
Ken casts his book aside.
Yes.
The buildings of Bruges do indeed look very handsome under floodlights.
That there is called the Groothuis Museum.
They all have funny names, don't they?
Yes, Flemish. In here it says, the Belgians twice sheltered fugitive English kings from being murdered, 1471 and 1651.
I used to hate history, didn't you? It's all just a load of stuff that's already happened. What are they doing over there? They're filming something. They're filming midgets.
Ray.
Ray runs over. An actor of restricted growth receives notes. The actor gives the finger to the director's back.
Ray, come on, let's go. My arse, let's go. They're filming midget. Oh my God. Look at that girl. She's gorgeous.
Ray, we're going right now.
Fuck off, are we? It's the best bit of brew so far. You and your buildings.
A gorgeous young blonde woman working on the film location looks back at Ray. She turns and leaves, casting another look over her shoulder at him. Ray moves away purposefully. The young woman pours herself a cup of coffee at the location catering table. Ray appears, takes a paper cup and stands next to her.
Hello. Do you speak English?
No.
Ah, yes, you do. Everybody does. What are you filming midgets for?
It's a Dutch movie. It's a dream sequence. It's a pastiche of Nicolas Roeg's Don't Look Now. Not a pastiche, but a homage is too strong. A nod of the head.
Wow, your English is very good.
She gives him a rather blank look and then turns to walk away.
A lot of midgets tend to kill themselves.
She stops and turns, half smiling, almost incredulous.
A disproportionate amount. Herve Villechaise, off of Fantasy Island. I think somebody off the Time Bandits. I suppose they must get really sad about, like, being really little in that. People looking at them and laughing at them, calling them names. You know, short arse. There's another famous midget. I miss him, but I can't remember. It's not the R2-D2, man. No, he's still going. I hope your midget doesn't kill himself. Your dream sequence will be fucked.
He doesn't like being called a midget. He prefers dwarf.
Well, this is exactly my point. People go around calling you a midget when you want to be called a dwarf. Of course you're going to blow your head off. My name's Ray. What's yours?
Chloe. How did you get past the security man?
Getting past security men. Sort of my job.
You're a shoplifter.
Nope, not a shoplifter. It's a good joke, though. No. I'll tell you what I am at dinner tomorrow night.
She turns away, laughing helplessly, leaving Ray looking completely crestfallen. She flips a small card over her shoulder. Ray moves across and picks it up off the cobbles. It reads Chloe Villette and bears her phone number.
How fucking cool.
She stalks away into the night. Ray, euphoric, passes the dwarf actor and gives him the thumbs up. At the hotel.
Mr. Blakely?
Yes.
No, Mr. Cranham. No, yes, Mr. Blakely, yes.
She gives him a withering look.
You have a message.
Shit.
Number one, why aren't you in when I fucking told you to be in? Number two, why doesn't this hotel have phones with fucking voicemail and not I have to leave messages with a fucking receptionist? Number three, you better fucking be in tomorrow night when I fucking call again or there'll be fucking hell to pay. I'm fucking telling you, Harry.
At the bottom of the typed message is a handwritten note. I am not the receptionist. I am the co-owner with my husband, Patrice, signed Marie. Ken smiles wryly. From where he stands on the hotel terrace, he can see Marie inside decorating the Christmas tree. She steps back to admire her work, placing her hands on her pregnant midriff. Ken lies in bed in the dark, but stirs on hearing the door. He winces as Ray flicks the switch.
You turn the fucking light off!
Sorry, Ken.
Keep the fucking noise down.
Someone's in a mood.
Ken grimaces as Ray noisily removes his boots.
You'll never guess what.
Can you shut your fucking mouth, please, and go to sleep?
Oh, sorry. Except I've got to take my contact lenses out.
Ken shields his eyes as the bathroom light goes on.
Five pints of beer and six bottles. No. 6 pints of beer and 7 bottles. And you know what? I'm not even pissed.
You never guess what, Ken. Ken, you'll never guess what?
What?
Got a date for tomorrow night.
I'm very happy for you.
With a girl.
Can you turn the light off, please?
I've only been in Bruges one day, got a date with a girl in the film business. The Belgian film business. They're doing a film about a midget.
Ray seems desperately to want Ken to be excited. Ray's beer seems to be catching up with him. He looks forlornly into the middle distance. A glorious winter morning, a stone bridge spans a canal. Marie enters the hotel dining room holding a coffee pot.
Miss? Marie? Sorry about the message last night. The man who left it is a bit of a... he's a bit of a...
Cock.
Yes, he's a bit of a cock.
Ray enters, standing gallantly aside for Marie. He then joins Ken at the breakfast table.
Harry called last night. We missed him.
Ray reads the message, his eyes widening.
He swears a lot, doesn't he?
We're staying in tonight. Whatever happens.
What? Except only one of us needs to stay in. Really?
Which one of us would that be now, Ray? I thought you didn't like Bruges.
I don't like Bruges. It's a shithole. But I did already say I had a date with a Belgian lady in the Belgian film business, which I did already say about before.
Ray bites his nails nervously as Ken deliberates.
Just don't get into any fucking trouble. We're keeping a low profile. And this morning and this afternoon, we are doing what I want to do. Got it?
Of course. Which I presume will involve culture.
Well, we shall strike a balance between culture and fun.
Somehow I believe, Ken, that the balance shall tip in the favour of culture. Like a big, fat, fucking retarded, fucking black girl on a seesaw. Opposite. A dwarf.
A trio of wooden crosses surmounts a gruesome carved altarpiece festooned with death's heads. A woman lights a candle to add to the bank of burning tapers already there. Ken, guidebook in hand, walks slowly up the nave of the church. Ray sits towards the back, fidgeting with the chair in front of him. Ken angrily gestures to Ray to join him.
Ray, did we or did we not agree that if I let you go on your date tonight, we do the things I wanted to do today?
We are doing the things that you wanted to do today.
And that we do them without you throwing a fucking moody like some five-year-old who's dropped all his sweets.
I didn't agree to that.
I'll cheer up.
Up there, the top altar, is a file brought back by a Flemish knight from the Crusades in the Holy Land. And that file, do you know what it's said to contain?
No, what's it said to contain?
It's said to contain some drops of Jesus Christ's blood. Yeah, that's how this church got its name. Basilica of the Holy Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this blood, right? No, it's dry blood. At different times over many years, they say it turned back into liquid. Turned back into liquid from dry blood. At various times of great stress.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm gonna open the queue and touch it, which is what you do.
Yeah. Do you have to?
Of course you don't have to. It's Jesus' fucking blood, isn't it? Of course you don't fucking have to. Of course you don't fucking have to.
Ken, his face hard once more, prowls away. At the top altar now, waiting his turn to touch the blood of Christ, Ken's enjoyment of his day out is clearly much compromised. He looks down to see Ray going out through a side door. Ray sits on a bench next to a man cradling a large black dog. Across the square walks the dwarf actor. Ray waves to him enthusiastically. The actor, however, blanks him. Ray lowers his hand awkwardly.
Little fucking cunt.
Appearing to regret his outburst, Ray drops his head. The dog turns its rather misty eyes towards Ray and gives him a doleful stare. Ray appears chastened. He looks balefully out across the square. Two small children hop joyfully as they walk with their parents. Ray watches them from beneath furrowed brows. He now sits in a confessional box.
Murder. Father.
Why did you murder someone, Raymond?
For money, Father.
For money? You murdered someone for money?
Yes, Father. Not out of anger, not out of nothing. For money.
Who did you murder for money, Raymond?
You, Father.
I'm sorry.
I said you, Father. What are you, deaf? Harry Water says hello.
The priest staggers up from the booth and opens a door. Ray stands staring as the priest, his body riddled with bullets, falls onto his knees and then his face. Ray passes through the doorway and falls to his knees himself. A young boy is kneeling, holding a red-spattered catechism card. A terrible wound in his forehead oozes blood. The boy's body slumps over sideways. Ray picks up the card, on which is written in a childish hand, 1, being moody, 2, being bad at maths, 3, being sad. Ray starts to shudder. Ken appears, grabs him by the shoulder and hurries him away. The bodies of the priest and of the boy remain sprawled on the parquet in a tragic tableau. In a Belgian art gallery, Ken stops in front of a Renaissance canvas depicting a robed scholar confronting a grotesque figure of death. Ray stands looking at a painting of similar vintage of a group of men observing the flaying of a cadaver. He looks in bemused horror at details of the picture, particularly of one man who is removing the skin of the entire lower leg of the dead body. Ray's lip curls in distaste, and he turns from the picture. Glancing back briefly, he shakes his head. The next picture on the circuit is equally gruesome. He turns away again. Even Ken seems to be finding the gallery hard going. They meet in front of a Hieronymus Bosch canvas packed with bizarre horrors.
I quite like this one. All the rest were rubbish by spastics, but this one's quite good. What's that all about then?
It's Judgment Day, you know?
Oh, yeah. What's that then?
Well, it's, you know, final day on Earth. And mankind will be judged for all the crimes they've committed and that.
Oh. And see who gets into heaven and who gets into hell and all that.
Yeah.
And what's the other place?
Purgatory.
Purgatory. Purgatory's kind of like the in-betweeny one. You weren't really shit, but you weren't all that great either. Like Tottenham. Do you believe in all that stuff, Ken?
Tottenham?
The Last Judgment and the afterlife. And guilt and sins and hell and all that.
I
don't know, right? I don't know what I believe.
The things you're taught as a child, they never really leave you, do they? So, like, I believe in trying to lead a good life.
Like if there's an old lady carrying a shopping home. Well, I don't try and help her carry a shopping, I don't go that far, but I certainly hold the door open for her and that and let her go out before me.
Yeah, and anyway, if you try to help her carry her shopping, she'd probably think you were just trying to nick her shopping.
Exactly.
This is the world we live in today.
At the same time, at the same time as trying to lead a good life, I have to reconcile myself with the fact that, yes, I have killed people. Not many people. Most of them are not very nice people. Apart from one person.
Who's that?
This fella, Danny Alaban's brother. He's just trying to protect his brother. Like you or I would. Just a lollipop man. He came at me with a bottle. What are you going to do? Shot him down.
In my book, though, sorry, someone comes at you with a bottle. That is a deadly weapon. He's got to take the consequences.
I know that in my heart. I also know that he's just trying to protect his brother, you know?
I know, but a bottle, that can kill you. It's a case of it's you or him. If he come at you with his bare hands, that'd be different. And that wouldn't have been fair.
Well, technically, your bare hands can kill somebody, too. They can be deadly weapons, too. I mean, what if you knew karate, say?
You said he was a lollipop man.
He was a lollipop man.
What's a lollipop man doing on fucking karate?
I'm just saying.
How old was he?
About 50.
What's a 50-year-old lollipop man doing on fucking karate? What was he, a Chinese lollipop man? Jesus, Ken. I'm trying to talk about...
I know what you're trying to talk about.
I killed a little boy. You keep bringing up a fucking lollipop man.
You didn't mean to kill a little boy.
I know I didn't mean to. But because of the choices I made and the course that I put into action, a little boy isn't here anymore. And he'll never be here again. I mean here in the world, not here in Belgium. Well, you'll never be here in Belgium either, will you? I mean, he might have wanted to come here when he got older. Don't know why. And that's all because of me. He's dead because of me. And I'm trying to get my head around it, but I can't. I will always have killed that little boy. That ain't ever going away. Ever. Unless... maybe I go away.
Don't even think like that.
A swan swims serenely on the canal at night. Ken sits reading in the hotel room. He smiles to himself as he watches Ray preening seriously in the mirror, deliberating between two buttons open on his shirt or just the one. Ray considers his own face, putting a hand to his mouth and pulling the skin one way and then the other. Ken looks on as if slightly concerned. Ray taps his lip and then his cheek. He breathes out and then turns to Ken as if for judgment.
You look good?
Ray looks down, his face darkening.
What's the matter anyway?
Ray waves to Ken and goes out, leaving Ken looking rather concerned. A busy restaurant. Ray sits at a table with Chloe, who lights a cigarette and looks smilingly into his eyes.
So what do you do, Raymond?
I shoot people for money.
What kinds of people?
Priests, children, you know, the usual.
Is there a lot of money to be made in that line of business?
There isn't priests, there isn't any children. So what is it you do, Chloe?
I sell cocaine and heroin to Belgian film crews.
Do you?
Do I look like I do?
You do, actually. Do I look like I shoot people?
No. Just children.
Mm-hmm.
Ray nervously takes a pull from his wine glass.
I saw your midget today. Little prick didn't even say hello.
Well, he's on a lot of ketamine.
What's that?
Horse tranquilizer.
A horse tranquilizer? Where'd he get that?
I sold it to him.
You can't sell horse tranquilizers to a midget.
The man at the next table appears irritated by her smoke.
This movie, I think it's going to be a very good one. There's never been a classic movie made in Bruges until now.
Of course there hasn't. It's a shithole.
Which is my hometown, right?
Well, it's still a shithole.
It's not a shithole.
What? Even midgets have to take drugs to stick it.
Okay. So, we've insulted my hometown. You're doing very well, Raymond. Why don't you tell me some Belgian jokes while you're at it?
Don't know any Belgian jokes. And if I did, I think I'd have the good sense not to... Hey, hang on. Is Belgium where there are all those child abuse murders lately? And I do know a Belgian joke. What's Belgium famous for? Chocolates and child abuse, and they only invented the chocolates to get to the kids. What?
One of the girls they murdered was a friend of mine.
Ray's face freezes as he plumbs the depths of his social gaffe.
Sorry, Chloe.
One of the girls they murdered wasn't a friend of mine. I just wanted to make you feel bad. It worked. Quite well.
They share a long, slightly edgy look. Finally, she winks at him and Ray dissolves into smiles. She gets up and walks towards the bathroom. The irritated man turns to watch her go.
It's fucking unbelievable.
Ray takes in the remark. He half smiles to himself as he appears to be preparing a reply, which is clearly going to be quite withering.
What's fucking unbelievable?
Are you talking to me?
He pauses, even though he should just hit the cunt. And he repeats, yes, I am talking to you. What's fucking unbelievable?
Well, I'll tell you what's fucking unbelievable, shall I? Blowing cigarette smoke straight into myself and my girlfriend's face. That's fucking unbelievable.
This is the smoking section.
I don't care if it's the smoking section. Right? She directed it right in my face, man. I don't want to die just because of your fucking arrogance.
Uh-huh. Isn't that what the Vietnamese used to say?
Vietnamese? What are you talking about, the Vietnamese? That statement makes no fucking sense at all.
Yes, it does. The Vietnamese!
Saying it over and over ain't gonna make any more sense out of it. How does the Vietnamese have any relevance whatsoever to myself and my girlfriend having to breathe your friend's cigarette smoke? Tell me, how's saying...
That's for John Lennon, you Yankee fucking cunt. A bottle! Now don't bother.
Having laid out the man, he fends off the woman's swing at him with the wine bottle and rabbit punches her out cold. He looks around as if mildly embarrassed and picks up Chloe's coat. She reappears in the dining area.
We're leaving.
I don't hit women. I would never hit a woman, Chloe. I'd hit a woman who was trying to hit me with a bottle. That's different. That's self-defense, isn't it? Or a woman who could do karate. We'd never hit a woman generally, Chloe. Don't think that. God, you're pretty.
I have to make a call.
Oh, no. You've gone off me now, haven't you? Just because I hit that fucking cow.
She kisses him. Ken watches a black and white movie on a small TV screen. Behind him on the bed are the dirties from his room service dinner.
Hello?
Where the fuck were you yesterday?
We just popped out for some dinner, Harry. We only popped out for half an hour.
Yeah? What'd you have?
For dinner?
Yeah.
Pizza Hut.
Was it nice?
Yeah, it was all right. You know, it was Pizza Hut. It was the same as in England.
Yeah, that's globalisation, isn't it? Is Ray there with you?
He's in the toilet.
Can he hear?
No.
What's he doing?
What do you mean?
Is he doing a wee or a poo?
I don't know, Harry. The door's closed.
We'll send him out on an errand for half an hour, but don't make it sound suspicious.
Ken sighs, but puts the receiver to his chest and goes through the charade.
Ray, why don't you go out down to the pub for half an hour? Yeah, I know I said you couldn't, but might as well enjoy ourselves, eh? No, I don't know if they've got bowling anywhere. We could have a look. Yeah, see ya. He's gone.
What'd you say to him?
I said, why don't you go have a drink? Say you've been cooped up.
What'd he say?
I said, yeah, you would. And you might go have a look, see if there's a bowling alley around.
Was he just having a wee?
Yeah, I think so. I assume so.
So he didn't mind?
No, he was glad to get out.
You definitely gone?
Yeah, he slammed the door.
I don't mean he's gone. Go check outside the door.
Ken raises his eyes and then crosses once more rather wearily to the door.
Harry, he's definitely gone.
You realise there are no bowling alleys in Bruges?
I realise that, Harry. The boy wanted to have a look anyway.
What were they going to have, a medieval fucking bowling alley?
As I say, I think he was just glad to get out and about.
Oh, was he having a nice time, seeing all the canals and that? I had a lovely time when I was there. All the canals and the old buildings and that.
When were you here?
When I was 7. Last happy holiday I fucking had. Have you been on a canal trip yet?
Yeah.
Have you been down like all the old cobble streets and that?
Yeah.
It's like a fairy tale, isn't it, that place?
Yeah.
The churches and the Gothic.
Yeah.
Is it Gothic?
Yeah.
So he's having a really nice time.
Well, I'm having a really nice time. I'm not sure if it's really his cup of tea.
What?
You know, I'm not sure if it's really his thing.
What do you mean it's not really his thing? What's that supposed to mean, it's not really his thing? What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
Nothing, Harry.
It's a fairy tale fucking town, isn't it? How can a fairy tale town not be somebody's fucking thing? How can all those canals and bridges and cobble streets and those churches and all that beautiful fucking fairy tale stuff, how can that not be somebody's fucking thing, eh?
What I think I meant to say was...
Is the swan still there?
Yeah, the
how
swans.
How can fucking swans not fucking be somebody's fucking thing, eh? How can that be?
What I think I meant to say was when he first arrived, he wasn't quite sure about it. You know, there's that big dual carriageway when you get off the train. That mightn't have been here when you were here last, Harry. Well, as soon as he got into, like, the old town proper and he saw the canals and the bridges and, you know, the swans and that, he just fucking loved it then. Couldn't get enough of it. The medieval part of town. It's just that initial dual carriageway thing sort of put him off for a second.
I don't remember a dual carriageway. It must be recent. It hasn't spoiled you, has it?
No. It's just that initial thing. And you know what? As we were walking through the streets, there was this sort of freezing fog hanging over everything. And it made it look almost like a fairy tale or something. And he turned to me. Do you know what he said?
What did he say?
He said, Ken, I know I'm awake, but I feel like I'm in a dream.
Yeah? He said that?
Yeah.
Meaning not in a good dream?
Yeah, of course. Like in a good dream.
Oh, good. I'm glad he likes it there. I'm glad we were able to give him something. Something good and happy. Because he wasn't a bad kid, was he?
Huh?
He wasn't a bad kid, was he? Listen, take down this address. Rahmstrasse 17. That's Rahm, like Ram, but with an extra A.
Rahmstrasse 17.
You got that?
Yes, Rahmstrasse 17.
Good. There'll be a man there tomorrow morning at 9. His name's Yuri.
Yuri.
He'll give you the gun. Ring me on the public phone at Jimmy Driscoll's about 3 or 4 tomorrow, after he's done.
After what's done?
Are you being thick?
No.
Listen, I like Ray. He was a good bloke, but when it all comes down to it, you know, he blew the head off a little fucking kid, and you brought him in, Ken. So if the buck don't stop with him, where does it stop?
Ken's face registers profound sadness.
Ken, if the buck don't stop with him, where does
it stops
it
with
stop?
Me, Harry. That's an easy one.
Don't get shirty, Ken. Listen, I'm just glad I was able to do something for the boy before he went.
Do what for the boy?
You know, have him get to see Bruges. I'd like to get to see Bruges again before I die. What was it he said again about? Yeah, it's like a dream.
I know I'm awake, but I feel like I'm in a dream.
Oh. Yeah. Give me a call when he's dead.
Ken's expression moves from sadness to resentment and distaste. Ray and Chloe roll together on a bed. As he kisses her, her eyes widen. A man in black leather and a shaven head is standing holding a nickel-plated pistol to the back of Ray's neck.
That's my fucking girlfriend, you asshole.
What are you doing?
Where are you from, fucker?
Ireland, originally.
And you think it's okay to come over to Belgium and a fuck another man's girl?
Look, I didn't know she had a boyfriend, all right? And I hadn't fucked her anyway. Ask her. I'd only put my hand on it.
Put the gun down.
Get down on your knees and open your mouth.
Don't start being silly.
Get down on your... Exactly at what point was it that all skinheads suddenly became puffs? Used to be you were a skinhead, you just went around beating up Pakistani 12-year-olds. Now it seems a prerequisite to be a fucking bum boy.
Eric pulls a knife. Ray has the gun.
That's not going to help you, man.
Ray, there's only place in that gun.
Eric leers at him. Ray tests out the weapon.
Hick, don't!
Now, who's the fucking bum boy? You fucking...
Chloe, what exactly is going on here?
I can't see! I can't see!
Of course you can't fucking see! I just shot a blank in your fucking eyes! Is this funny, your boyfriend?
No. I mean, he used to be.
Well, what's he doing here?
We... You rob... Tourists sometimes.
I fucking knew it was too good to be true. I knew you'd have never shagged me normally.
No, that's not true. I called it off tonight. I told him not to come tonight. Why did you come tonight?
Chloe, I can't see, I swear it.
Oh, stop whining like a big gay baby. I haven't had a shag in months.
I can't see. Out of this side, Chloe. I have to go to the hospital.
I'll drive you.
Great. Now the whole night's ruined.
No. You can stay if you want. I just don't know how long I'll be.
Oh, I just knew someone like you would never like someone like me.
Oh, God.
I just knew.
What do you mean, someone like me?
You know, someone nice.
She smiles at him as if in disbelief and then bends down to kiss him.
God. Call me.
Ray waves slightly ruefully to Chloe as she heads off down the stairs after her wounded, not-so-tough-guy boyfriend. Ray stands and slouches frustratedly across the room, slipping the pistol into his pocket as he goes. He leans against the dresser and fiddles disconsolately with the ornament standing on it. He lifts the lid of a pot in the form of a bright green cartoon frog. He stops short and then pulls from the pot a number of small polythene packages of pills and powders.
Ching.
He smiles as he pockets the drugs. Opening a cupboard, he finds a box of blank cartridges, then a box of live rounds. He shakes out the shiny shells into the palm of his hand. Ken sits at a bar, swiftly gulping down the contents of his beer glass. He gestures for more to the slightly supercilious barman.
You got some sort of problem?
Yeah, no problem. 4 beers in 20 minutes. No problem.
Fuck off.
Onto the next two bar stools arrive the dwarf actor and a glamorous blonde woman.
Beer and wine.
How's the movie going?
It's a jumped up Euro trash piece of rip-off fucking bullshit.
Like in a bad way.
Ken watches the woman walk off.
Your girlfriend's very pretty.
She ain't my girlfriend. She's a prostitute I just picked up.
Didn't know there were any prostitutes in Bruges.
Just have to look in the right places. Brothels are good.
Well, you've picked up a very pretty prostitute.
Thank you.
You from the States?
Yeah. But don't hold it against me.
Just try not to say anything too loud or crass.
The dwarf absorbs this. The prostitute comes back. The dwarf lifts their two drinks down off the high bar with some difficulty. Ken remains lost in his own grim thoughts. Ray breezes into the bar.
Hey, ho. Drowning your sorrows, huh?
What sorrows?
You know, being a sad old ugly little man. One gay beer, please.
How'd your date go?
My date involved 2 instances of extreme violence. 1 instance of her hand on my cock and my finger up her thing, which lasted all too briefly. And then I was the way. 1 instance of me stealing 5 grams of a very high quality cocaine and 1 instance of me blinding a puffy little skinhead. So all in all, my even pretty much balanced out fine.
You got 5 grams of coke?
I've got 4 grams on me and 1 gram in me, which is why my heart is going like the clappers as if I'm about to have a heart attack. So if I collapse any minute now, please remember to tell the doctors that it might have something to do with the coke.
Give us a gram then.
I thought you were laying off because it makes you depressed.
You know what? Right now, I don't really give a fuck.
Ken takes a wrap of cocaine and heads towards the bathroom. Ray looks around the bar. Spotting the dwarf in a corner, French kissing with the prostitute, he walks purposefully across and stands over them. His face registers mild distaste. Finally, to get the dwarf's attention, he prods him on the side of the head repeatedly.
Why didn't you wave hello to me today when I waved hello to you today?
I was on a very strong force tranquilizer today. I wasn't waving hello to anybody. Except maybe to a horse.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Just horse shit.
You from America?
Yeah. Don't hold it against me.
Well, that's for me to decide, isn't it? You from America too?
No, I'm from Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. Amsterdam's just a load of bloody prostitutes, isn't it?
Yes, that's why I came to Bruges. I thought I'd get a better price for my pussy here.
Huh? You two are weird.
Ray's eyes are wide and glazed.
Would you like some cocaine?
Ken appears at his shoulder, eyes wide and glazed.
I've also got some acid and some ecstasy.
Ray sits in a hotel room with the dwarf. The blonde prostitute lies on the bed. Ken sits close to another woman.
Her villa chase, I know, did. The dwarf off. I think the time bandits did. Lots of midgets. Dwarfs. Top themselves. Shitloads.
The dwarf stares up at him.
Would you ever think about it?
Huh?
Would you ever think about killing yourself because you're a midget?
Fuck, man. What kind of question is that?
Just chatting, Harry.
The dwarf moves across to the bed in disgust.
See, Ken, this is the kind of hotel Harry should have put us in. A 5-star with prostitutes in. You know, sometimes I think Harry doesn't even give a shit about us at all. Has he still not called?
No, still hasn't called.
No news is good news, eh?
Ray sits with the dark-haired woman on his lap, kissing her. Ken drinks beer in large quantities. The hooker off to snort the more cocaine.
It's gonna be a war, man. I could see it. There's gonna be a war between the blacks and between the whites. You ain't even gonna need a uniform no more. This ain't gonna be a war where you pick your side. Your side's already picked for you.
I don't know whose side I'm fighting on. Fighting with the blacks. Whites are gonna get their heads kicked in.
You don't decide this shit, man.
Well, who are the half-cats gonna fight with?
With the blacks, man. That's obvious.
But what about the Pakistanis?
The blacks.
What about... Think about it. What about the Vietnamese?
The blacks!
Well, I'm definitely fighting with the blacks if they got the Vietnamese. So hang on. Would all of the white midgets in the world be fighting against all the black midgets in the world?
Yeah.
That'd make a good film.
You don't know how much shit I've had to take off of black midgets, man.
That's undeniably true.
See, Jimmy, my wife was black. And I loved her very much. And in 1976, she was murdered by a white man. So, where the fuck am I supposed to stand in all this blood and carnage?
Did they get the guy who did it?
A friend of mine got him.
Harry Waters got him.
So tell me, Jim, whose side do I fight on in this wonderful war?
I think you need to weigh up all your options and let your conscience decide, Ken.
Jim, the dwarf, hops down from the shelf he has been sitting on. The women look slightly uncomfortably towards Ken, who takes his coat and gets up to leave.
Two monkey hookers and a racist dwarf. I think I'm heading home.
Yeah? I think I'll come with you.
Hey, what?
Back off, shorty.
You don't know karate. Ah!
Don't say you didn't have a cover. Short arse!
The pair make their exit, leaving the diminutive Jim writhing on the floor, having been karate chopped on the neck by Ray. The spires of Bruges are bathed in silvery morning light. The clock at Ray's bedside reads 8:15. Ken emerges from the bathroom and goes out through the door. Ken crosses a stone bridge. Ray wakes up and looks around. He lies down again and anxiously puts a hand to his mouth. A tear trickles from his eye. Ken rounds a corner into a side street and comes to a heavy front door with the number 17 on it. It is opened by a man in a silk dressing gown.
Meeting Yuri?
Yes, I'm Yuri.
Ken walks through the door. He passes through into a huge living room absolutely crammed with works of art and dusty curios. On a low table lies a pistol and a silencer. Ken picks up first one and then the other.
Mr. Waters said that might be necessary. There are a lot of alcoves in the Cunningham Astrid Park. You use this word, alcoves?
Alcoves, yes. Sometimes.
There are not many people around in these alcoves in Christmas time. If I were to murder a man, I would murder him here. Are you sure this is the right word, alcoves?
Alcoves, yes. Kind of like nooks and crannies.
Nooks and crannies, yes. Perhaps this would be more accurate. Nooks and crannies rather than alcoves. Yeah.
Ken throws Yuri a disparaging look.
You are going to do it, aren't you? Mr. Waters will be very disappointed.
Of course I'm going to fucking do it. It's what I do.
Ken enters the hotel and passes Marie without stopping.
Your friend was behaving rather oddly this morning.
Ken comes back down the stairs.
Oddly? How?
Well, he asked me about the baby, and if I wanted a boy or a girl. I said I didn't mind, as long as it's healthy, of course. But then he gave me 200 euros to give to the baby. I refused, obviously, but he was quite insistent. Would you give it back to him when you see him? I don't want to be ungrateful, but it seemed like all the money he had.
Do you know where he is now?
He said he was going to the park.
Ken looks sick. In the park, Ray sits alone on a bench by the children's play area. It is raining. A sole mother and child play on the swings. Ken looks on from behind a pillar. The woman and child leave. Ray sits looking glum. He casts a glance upwards and then over his shoulder. Ken ducks behind the pillar. He then pulls the gun from his pocket and screws on the silencer.
Sorry, Ray. Sorry.
He sets off towards Ray's bench, holding the pistol close at his side. Rounding a row of leafless saplings, he gets a clear line on Ray's back and walks purposefully towards the bench. As he draws closer, he raises the pistol. Ray raises the nickel-plated pistol he took from Chloe and puts it to his temple. Ken is appalled.
Ray, don't! Fucking hell! Where the fuck did you come from?
I was behind a thing. What the fuck are you doing, Ray?
What the fuck are you doing?
Nothing.
He hides the pistol.
Oh, my God. You were gonna kill me.
Oh, my God. You were gonna kill yourself.
What? I'm allowed to.
No, you're not.
What? I'm not allowed to, and you are? How's that fair?
Ken struggles to find an answer to this.
We'll go somewhere and talk about this, please. I wasn't going to go through with it, right?
You fucking looked like you were going to go fucking through with it.
Where'd you get that gun? A friend of Harry's.
Fuck, man. Let me see it. Silencer two. Nice. Mine's a bloody girl's gun.
He weighs it disdainfully in his hand and passes it to Ken. Ken looks at it, then pockets it.
I'm keeping it.
Pardon me? Give me my gun back.
I'm not getting it back. You're a suicide case.
And you're trying to shoot me in the fucking head.
You're not getting that gun back.
Oh, great day this has turned out to be. I'm suicidal. My mate tries to kill me. My gun gets nicked and we're still in fucking bruise.
Listen. I'm going to give you some money and put you on a train somewhere.
Back to England?
And Ray, you'll be a dead man.
Ken, I don't want to be a dead man. You've been missing something.
You don't want to be a dead man, Ray.
Ken. I killed a little boy.
Ken puts an arm around the sobbing Ray.
And save the next little boy. Just go away somewhere. Get out of this business and try to do something good.
You're not going to help anybody dead. You're not going to bring that boy back. But you might save the next one.
What am I going to be, a doctor? You need exams.
Do anything, Ray. Do anything.
In the bathroom at the hotel, Ken stands looking gravely down at Ray's suicide note. Dear Ken, I went to the park so she wouldn't have to clean it up. Ray. He comes back out to where Ray sits.
What a wanker.
He said this whole trip, this whole being in Bruges thing, was just to give you one last joyful memory before you died.
In Bruges?
Ken grins.
The Bahamas, maybe?
Why fucking Bruges?
I suppose it's cheaper.
Huh. Ken puts Ray on a train.
The rest of the acid and the ecstasy. Can I have me going back, please?
Ken shakes his head.
What am I gonna do, Ken? What am I gonna do? Just keep moving. Keep on moving. Try not to think about it. Learn a new language, maybe?
Sure, I can hardly do English. It's one thing I like about Europe, though. You don't have to learn any other languages.
Just forget about home for a while. See how the land lies in 6 years, 7 years. 7 years is not that long.
It's longer than that boy got. My first fucking job. Great hitman I turned out to be.
Some people just aren't cut out for it, right?
You?
Ken searches for a response, but finally looks away.
When are you going back to England?
I'll head back in a couple of hours or something.
Harry's not going to be mad at you, is he? For letting me go.
I'll sort out Harry.
Just tell him I'd probably kill myself in a fortnight anyway.
You won't. Are you right?
The pneumatic doors of the train slide shut between them. Ray shrugs at Ken through the glass panels of the door. Ken smiles stoically at Ray and winks at him as the train pulls away. As the train whisks Ray away, Ken stands for a few moments and then turns and walks doggedly off. He calls from a payphone.
Harry? It's Ken. Listen to this noise. Do you know what that is? I know you know it's a train. Do you know what train? Well, it's a train that Ray just got on. And he's alive and he's well and he doesn't know where he's going and neither do I. So if you need to do your worst, do your worst. You've got the address of the hotel. I'll be here waiting. Because I've got to quite like Bruges now. It's like a fucking fairy tale or something.
Harry, a slim man in an open-necked striped shirt, stands in a well-furnished study in a country house with lavish, peaceful grounds. His dark eyes bore into the phone in his hand and then rove restlessly and dangerously around. A woman leaves three small children and a young Oriental woman in the sumptuous living room and enters the study.
Harry! Harry!
What?
It's an inanimate fucking object.
You're an inanimate fucking object!
He throws the destroyed phone to one side. The woman walks away. Harry bends down to the children.
Now, you lot be good for your mummy and Imamoto, OK? Because Daddy's got to go away for a few days.
Where are you going?
I've got to go to Bruges.
Bruges? Where's that?
It's in Belgium.
Why would anybody have to go to Belgium?
Because I've got to sort something out.
Is it something to do with the phone?
It's something to do with Ken. It's a matter of honour.
Well, it ain't going to be dangerous, is it?
Harry's eyes cloud and he stands to speak to his wife.
Well, of course it's going to be dangerous if it's a matter of fucking honour.
You are bringing the fellas with you. Tell me you're bringing the fellas with you.
He shakes his head.
Look, I'm sorry for calling you an inanimate object. I was upset.
Ken stands in the hotel room, straightening his tie in the mirror. The tie, like his suit, is a deep charcoal colour. He looks ready for a funeral, especially in the muted Flemish light of the room. He assesses the object and appears satisfied. He picks up the nickel-plated pistol from the dresser, opens a drawer, and places it inside, covering it over with a cloth. Ray sits on the train. He gazes blankly out at the flat, waterlogged terrain where nothing breaks the monotony except for a sparse line of trees on the horizon and a single church tower. Ken puts the other pistol in the breast pocket of his jacket. He places a sealed envelope on the shelf beneath the mirror. He takes one final look at himself in the mirror, nods dourly, and turns to leave. Ray's train grinds to a halt in the middle of the blank countryside. He peers out of the window and then casts a look back down the train. A man in blue police uniform walks through the carriages. Ray sits back, trying to look relaxed, but in fact making himself terribly obvious. The policeman pauses and comes across to him.
You're Irish?
Yes.
What is your name?
Derek Pearl Lurl.
You heed the Canadian?
Huh?
You heed the Canadian?
I heed the Canadian. I don't know what you're talking about.
The man from the restaurant points from down the carriage.
That's him. That's the motherfucker.
Ray sits back in his seat, half smiling as if in relief. The policeman continues with swift reason.
You heed the Canadian?
Yeah. Canadian.
Shit.
Ray gets up. The policeman puts cuffs on him.
We're taking you back to Bruges.
Brilliant.
Harry walks, grimly purposeful, across a small footbridge beneath one of the medieval towers of Bruges. As he passes close to a canal on which are swimming several swans, he almost imperceptibly breaks step. In Yuri's art-cluttered parlour, Chloe's boyfriend Eric sits on a sofa in front of a low table covered with automatic weapons. His left eye is bandaged with a circular pad. Harry enters.
Aye, aye.
Take your pick, Mr. Waters.
An Uzi? I'm not from South Central Los fucking Angeles. I didn't come here to shoot 20 black 10-year-olds in a fucking drive-by. I want a normal gun for a normal person.
Yuri picks up the one Harry's eye has lighted on and hands it delicately to him to inspect.
I knew he wouldn't kill a guy. I could see it in his eyes when I was telling him about the alcoves.
About the what?
The alcoves, the alcoves in the Conning and Gaswood Park. Oh, I also have some dum-dums. You use this word, dum-dums? The bullets that make the head explode?
Dum-dums, yeah.
Would you like some of these dum-dums?
I know I shouldn't, but I will.
Harry picks out a couple, but then takes the whole box.
Motherfucker!
Is he talking to me?
No, Eric's on your side, Mr. Waters. Your young friend blinded him last night.
Raided?
I was trying to rob him. And he took my gun from me. And the gun was full of blanks. And he shot the blank into my eye. And now, I cannot see from this eye ever again, the doctors say.
Well, to be honest, it sounds like it was all your fault.
What?
I mean, basically, if you're robbing a man and you're only carrying blanks and you allow your gun to be taken off you and you allow yourself to be shot in the eye with a blank, which I assume the person has to get quite close to you, then, yeah, really, it's all your fault for being such a poof. So why don't you stop whinging and cheer the fuck up?
Eric, I really wouldn't respond.
Eric has stood up, but Harry simply stares with icy amusement at the young man's bluster.
I thought you wanted the guy dead.
I do want the guy dead. I want him fucking crucified. But it don't change the fact that he stitched you up like a blind little gay boy, does it? Thanks for the gun, Yuri.
Harry turns and leaves without a backward glance. Harry walks along a cobbled street with taut, measured steps. Entering a square brightly festooned with Christmas lights, he looks around. then spots Ken sitting at a terrace table of a bar, raising a beer glass to his lips. Harry stares, snake-like. Ken takes a sip and gestures towards the vacant seat opposite him. Harry's face registers a range of powerful, barely contained emotions as he crosses to the table. He stands for a moment, staring threateningly down at Ken. Ken manages to maintain an appearance of benign calm. Harry finally pulls back the chair and arranges himself very erectly in it, tweaking up the legs of his trousers and folding his hands in his lap. They hold each other's gaze.
Well?
The boy is suicidal, Harry. He's a walking dead man. Keeps going on about hell and purgatory.
When I phoned you yesterday, did I ask you, Ken, will you do me a favour and become Ray's psychiatrist, please? No. What I think I asked you was, could you go blow his fucking head off for me? He's suicidal. I'm suicidal. You're suicidal. Everybody's fucking suicidal. We don't all keep going on about it. Has he killed himself yet? No. So he's not fucking suicidal, is he?
He put a loaded gun to his head this morning. I stopped him.
This gets fucking worse.
We were down the park.
Let me get this right. You were down the park? What's that got to do with fucking anything? Let me get this right. Not only have you refused to kill the boy, you've even stopped the boy from killing himself, which would have solved my problem, which would have solved your problem, which sounds like would have solved the boy's problem.
It wouldn't have solved his problem.
Ken, if I had killed a little kid, accidentally or otherwise, I wouldn't have thought twice. I'd have killed myself on the fucking spot. On the fucking spot. I'd have stuck the gun in my mouth on the fucking spot.
That's you, Harry. The boy has the capacity to change. The boy has the capacity to do something decent with his life.
Excuse me, Ken. I have the capacity to change.
Yeah, you do. You have the capacity to get fucking worse.
Oh, yeah, now I'm getting down to it.
Harry, let's face it. I'm not being funny. I mean, no disrespect. But you're a cunt. You're a cunt now. You've always been a cunt. And the only thing that's going to change is you're going to become an even bigger cunt. Maybe you have some more cunt kids.
Leave my kids fucking out of it. What have they done? You fucking retract that bit about my cunt fucking kids.
I retract that bit about your cunt fucking kids.
Insulting my fucking kids? That's going overboard, mate.
I retracted it, didn't I? Still leaves you being a cunt.
You fucking got that.
Harry looks up briefly as a waiter brings a beer to the table for him. The two men continue staring at each other. Harry sips his beer.
Where's Ray now?
Oh, right about now, Ray is in one or other of the 1 million towns in mainland Europe it's possible to be in, other than here.
Ray is escorted out of a police cell. He walks towards where Chloe stands smiling radiantly. He covers his face with his coat as if in shame.
I'll get all the money back to you as soon as I get through to my friend.
It's not a problem, Raymond.
And I'll get all your acid and your ecstasy back to you, too.
You assume it.
I'm assuming you've got your gun on you.
That Yuri bloke's a funny fella, isn't he?
He does yoga.
The alcoves.
Was he going on to you about the alcoves?
The alcoves in the Kurikanastra Park. Harry, I know you gotta do what you gotta do. It's a bit crowded around here, you know?
Well, I'm not gonna have a shootout in the middle of 1,000 fucking Belgians, am I? Not to mention the other nationalities, just on their holidays.
To see the swans and the Gothic and all the fairy tale stuff, eh?
Are you trying to fucking wind me up?
No, Harry.
On top of calling me a cunt and calling my kids cunts, I might just have to fucking shoot you right here. Christ.
Let's go up the bell tower. Be quiet up there this time of evening. Let's go up there.
Harry casts a glance over his shoulder at the illuminated tower. The pair both stand. Ken settles up for the drinks, and then they walk together away across the square. Down at the bottom of the tiered stone tower, Ray walks with his arm around Chloe's shoulder.
Yep. Canadians.
I feel a bit bad. They didn't kill John Lennon, did they? Anyway, I'm supposed to turn up to court here in 2 days.
Are you going to turn up?
I don't know. I forgot to stay for you.
Most beautiful woman I've ever seen in all of your stupid life.
As the pair stand on the square kissing passionately, Ray and Harry stomp past, oblivious to them, on their way to the tower.
Tower is closed this evening. No way, it's supposed to be open till 7. Tower is usually open until 7. Yesterday an American had a heart attack at the tower. Today the tower is closed.
Here, cranky, here's 100 for you. We're only going to be 20 minutes.
The jowly Belgian throws Harry's money back in his face and proceeds to jab his finger on his forehead.
The tower is closed this evening. Understand, Englishman?
Ken steps away discreetly to await the inevitable. Having beaten the man to a pulp with the butt of his pistol, Harry puts the chain across the entrance to the tower. Eric happens to be passing at this moment and takes this in before moving on again. Ray and Chloe sit at a table staring hilariously at Jim the Dwarf, who's dressed in schoolboy shorts, blazer and cap.
Jimmy, I've been wanting to say I'm really sorry for karate chopping you the other night. That was way out of order.
You know, Ray, I'd find it easier to believe and forgive you somehow if the two of you weren't laughing straight in my fucking face! It's for the goddamn movie, man.
It is a nice town, Harry. I'm glad I got to see it. I didn't mean to be taking the piss out of it being a fairy tale place. It is a fairy tale place. It really is.
It's just a shame it's in Belgium, really. But then you think, if it wasn't in Belgium, if it was somewhere good, there'd be too many people coming to see it. It would spoil the whole thing.
I'm glad I got to see it. Before I died.
They pull out their guns, but Ken lays his down on the parapet of the tower.
What are you doing? What are you fucking doing?
I'm not fighting anymore, Harry.
All right, then I'm blowing your fucking head off. Oh, don't come over all gandy. What are you fucking doing? Ken, stop messing about, please. Pick up your gun. I know I'm going to beat you anyway, because you're a spaz, but...
Harry. I'm totally in your debt. Things that have gone between us in the past. I love you unreservedly for all that. Yeah. For your integrity. For your honour. I love you. The boy had to be let go. Boy, I had to be given a chance. And if to do that, I had to say, fuck you, and fuck what I owe you, and fuck everything that's going on between us. And that's what I had to do. But I'm not fighting you. And I accept totally everything you've got to do. I accept it. Totally.
Oh, yeah? Well, you say all that fucking stuff, I can't fucking shoot you now, can I?
It's entirely up to you, Harry. It's entirely your call. All I'm saying is, I'm not fighting.
Harry looks out over the town as if totally disarmed. Turning back, however, he shoots Ken in the leg.
Fucking cunt!
Look, I'm not gonna do nothing to you just because you're standing about like Robert fucking Powell.
Like who? Like Robert fucking Powell, like of Jesus, the fucking Nazareth.
My fucking leg!
The psycho dork turns out to just be a lovable little schoolboy. And it's also kind of Boschian nightmare. Kiss my ass.
I guess at least there weren't any black people involved, eh, Jimmy?
I wasn't talking about
There's going to be a war between all the blacks and all the whites. And all the black midgets and all the white midgets, which would actually be really good.
That's just cocaine.
He didn't even want the Vietnamese on his side.
That's just cocaine. Listen, we're filming down by the Pointy Building tonight. It might actually be good for once. You guys should come along.
I think we're just gonna have a quiet one tonight, Jimmy.
That's how it is. Another life.
Jim finishes his beer and then walks away across the square in his shorts and cap.
They're great, aren't they?
As Jim continues across the square, he passes Eric, walking in the other direction. Eric clocks him and shakes his head slightly.
You did.
Ray spots Eric approaching. Eric stops near their table, looks at them, and then glances towards the tower. Chloe gestures for him to join them. Ray waves innocuously. Eric does not respond, but heads off towards the tower, gathering pace as he goes and leaping the chain across the doorway. Chloe and Ray exchange a glance. Harry very solicitously helps the wounded Ken limp down the spiral staircase of the bell tower. They stop. Ken sits down and Harry reaches for his gun.
Mr. Waters! Mr. Waters!
Who's that?
It's Eric!
The blind boy?
Yeah. Yes.
What do you fucking want?
The guy you're looking for. The guy Ray. He's downstairs at the bar.
Ken goes for his gun, but Harry grabs him. The pair struggle. It looks for a moment as if Ken is managing to force Harry's gun around to point at its owner. Harry forces it back, however. Ken's face crumples. Harry looks him seriously, yet almost compassionately, in the eye. Blood gushes from Ken's neck. His hand goes limp in Harry's own. Harry draws close to Ken, seemingly struggling to find the right words.
I'm sorry, Ken. But you can't kill a kid and expect to get away with it. You just can't.
Harry gets up to leave. Ken still struggles to hold him back with what strength he has remaining. Harry hurries down the stairs to the landing where Eric stands.
Where?
To the left when you come out. The bar to the left.
Ken spots the pistol lying on the step at his feet and struggles to pick it up. He turns his face towards the bell chamber and begins crawling back upwards with supreme effort.
On Raglan Road, of an autumn day,
Harry continues trotting down the stairs.
I saw her first and anew.
Chloe and Ray kiss at the bar table.
Her dark hair would weave.
Ken's blood smears the top steps.
That I might one day rue.
Ken reaches the parapet.
I saw the danger and I passed along the enchanted way. And I said, let grief be a fallen leaf at the dawning of the day.
Gun drawn, he peers over. Mist obscures his view into the square.
In November, we tripped lightly along the ledge of a deep ravine. Where can be seem. The worth of passion's play.
Ken stows his gun.
The queen of hearts still making tart. And I'm not making hay. Oh, I loved too much. And by such is happiness thrown away.
He showers change, causing people below to move aside.
When the angel woos, the clay he'd lose his wings at the dawn of day.
Ken leaps from the tower. Ray shelters Chloe from seeing what has happened. Ray stares across and then runs over to Ken's body. Drawing closer, he clutches his head in anguished realization. Ray reaches into Ken's coat and pulls out the weapon, only to find it has smashed on impact.
Ken, where's my gun? Where's my gun?
I'm gonna die now, I think.
Oh, Ken. Jesus.
Ken's eyes flicker and then glaze over. Ray weeps, then sees Harry appear at the foot of the tower, gun in hand. The onlookers scatter. Harry looks down ruefully at Ken's body, then turns his fearsome gaze on Ray, whose eyes widen. Ray runs off. Chloe screams as Harry heads off in pursuit of Ray. Ray runs for his life down the quaint cobbled shopping streets decorated with sparkling Christmas trees. Ray dives down a side street leading off a broad square. Harry is starting to breathe hard. Ray rounds another corner into a kind of colonnade. The forest of pillars prevent Harry getting a good aim. Ray reaches the end of a narrow alley and turns right past a shopfront and over a bridge. Harry comes down the alley after him, but his greater age is now definitely beginning to tell on him. He staggers out of the alleyway and looks both ways. He chooses to go the same way that Ray has gone. Reading, Ray barges through the glass doors into reception.
Mr. Blakely said you'd left.
I need to keep the room right now. Quickly, now! You gotta go home right now. It's very, very dangerous here. Right, go home! Right now!
Harry stands on a stone bridge. Snow is starting to fall around him. Laying his gun down on the stone parapet of the bridge, he pulls from his pocket a map of Bruges on which he has marked Ken's Hotel in black pen. Having got his bearings, he pulls the clip from his pistol and slots in some of the dum-dum shells. Ray, meanwhile, is searching the room frantically for the gun. He locates it. He catches sight of the envelope Ken left by the mirror. It is marked, "My Last Will and Testament."
I'm not going to go through you, am I, with your baby in that? I'm a nice person, but could you just get out of the fucking way, please?
Ray gets a bead on Harry from above, but cannot shoot with Marie there.
Marie! Just let him come up, it's okay. Harry, swear not to start shooting until she's left the hotel.
I swear not to start shooting until she's left the hotel, I totally swear.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. This is my hotel, so you can fuck off.
Marie sits defiantly on the stairs. Neither Harry nor Ray quite knows how to handle this particular situation.
I suppose you got a gun up there?
Yeah.
Well, what are we going to do? We can't stand here all night.
Why don't you both put your guns down? Go home.
Don't be stupid. This is the shootout.
Harry, I've got an idea.
What?
My room faces onto the canal, right? I'm going to go back to my room, jump into the canal, and see if I can swim to the other side and escape.
Right.
If you go outside and round the corner, you can shoot at me from there and try and get me. That way we leave this lady and her baby out of the whole entire thing.
You completely promised to jump in the canal. I don't want to run out there, come back in 10 minutes and find you fucking hiding in a cupboard.
I completely promise, Harry. I'm not going to risk having another little kid die, am I?
So, hang on. I go outside, then I go which way, right or left?
You go right, don't you? You can see it from the doorway. It's a big fucking canal!
All right, Jesus, I've only just got here, haven't I? Okay, on account of 1, 2, 3, go, okay?
Okay.
Ray braces himself to run. Harry likewise gets into the zone.
What? Who says it?
Oh, you say it.
You guys are crazy.
Hey, ready?
Ready.
Set?
Set.
1, 2, 3, go!
Ray races towards the window of the room as Harry bolts for the door. A small barge is happening past on the canal, and so Ray is able to jump down onto the tarpaulined cargo. His pistol slips into the water.
Keep driving.
The driver looks round. Ray, kneeling up on the tarpaulin, spots Harry arriving on the canal side.
No way. You're way too far away.
Harry's aim is good enough, however, to put a bullet right through Ray's body just below the heart. Harry nods approvingly to himself. Ray clutches his abdomen. Harry runs off past Marie, who looks on bemusedly. Ray slips off the barge onto a jetty and struggles away into the streets. Harry, still in pursuit, runs across a stone bridge. Ray limps across a cobbled square. Harry follows through the swirling snow. Ray emerges into a square milling with extras on the set of Jim's film. They are all in Bosch-style costumes, many with the heads or skulls of animals. Harry rounds the corner into the square. He holds his gun at his side as he pursues the staggering figure of Ray. Jim, still in his schoolboy get-up, spots Ray and moves towards him. Ray stops. Harry draws closer.
The little boy.
That's right, Ray. The little boy.
Ray takes the 3 shots in the back and falls to his knees before keeling over sideways. Harry stares ahead to beyond Ray. Ray crawls across the snowy cobbles. Harry walks, slowly, horrified, towards where Jim's body lies. He stares down at what remains of the dwarf's head. He looks down at Ray, and then around about, realization dawning.
Ah, I see.
Harry places the muzzle of the gun in his mouth.
I know.
It's not. You've got to stick to your principles.
Harry shoots himself. Ray rolls over onto his back, blood issuing from his mouth. The intricate architecture of Bruges rises up around him. The grotesques of the film set look down as he is loaded onto a stretcher and taken away by paramedics. Marie looks down. Eric watches him pass. Zoe has hysterics.
There's a Christmas tree somewhere in London with a bunch of presents underneath it. That'll never be opened. And I thought, if I survive all this, I'll go to that house, apologize to the mother there, and accept whatever punishment she chose for me. Prison, death, didn't matter. Because at least in prison and at least in death, you know, I wouldn't be in fucking Bruges. But then, like a flash, it came to me. And I realized, fuck, man, maybe that's what hell is. The entire rest of eternity spent in fucking Bruges. And I really, really hoped I wouldn't die. I really, really hoped I wouldn't die.
The white interior of the ambulance. The end.
There's Oscar-winning crime drama coming to Sky Movies Premiere and Premiere HD this month in Tim Burton's brutal, gory musical. With Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter and an all-star cast, Sweeney Todd plays for 7 nights from the 14th. Find out more about what's coming up at skymovies.com.